Nightmare Town.
Hello, neighbors, and welcome back to Nightmare Town. We are Betty Boom.
And I'm Mandemonium.
And I'm super excited about this week because we are covering...
Blood.
I did watch that video a lot.
I love that video of that little kid. Blood.
It's not funny.
It's not funny.
It was so cute.
He genuinely was concerned, and it was very sweet.
It was. So, yeah, our episode this week is Blood. I'm super excited and a lot of hyper right now, so do we have anything to talk about?
Do we? I don't think we do.
I don't think
we have any, like...
Oh, we do have a little bit of news. I just remembered it. The only thing that I can think of that we would have to talk about is I went over to our Patreon page and I actually reconfigured a couple of things because I got to looking at it and I was like, let's make that a little bit more affordable. So if you choose to become one of our patrons, we have three tiers. Our first one is called the Neighborhood Watch. It's for $5 and you get early access to episodes, stickers, and a shout out during an episode. Our second tier for $8 is called Bellow Break, and you get the same as Neighborhood Watch, and then you get behind the scenes, a cryptid plush, and bonus episodes. And our last tier, which is called Creepy Cryptid, you get the same as Neighborhood Watch and Bellow Break, and you get pins and access to our Discord, where you can have more of like a one-on-one with Manda and I.
Yeah, you hang out.
Yeah. So, and over on the Discord, we're going to be doing, like, movie nights, and we might have, like, a book club, probably not, because I don't have that much free time, nor do I have the bandwidth to do that.
Well.
It's the thought that counts, but we'll do stuff like that.
We'll do fun things.
Yeah. But anyway, like Manda said, this episode is called Blood, and it is my turn to go first, and I am... more than a little excited about this episode because I have been preparing since we ended last episode.
I heard you bought an entire book just for research purposes.
I did. I bought a book from Amazon for research purposes and I read all of it in a day because ADHD. But yeah, no, it wasn't a super thick book. I actually... thought I had bought the super thick book, but apparently I had gotten the wrong one.
Well,
that's okay. It was still informative. Okay, so for the 67% of you lovely neighbors who voted on Facebook and Instagram that I would be covering Vlad the Impaler, also known as Vlad Dracula, also known as Dracula, this episode, you are, drumroll, wrong. I will not be covering Vlad the Impaler in this episode, but maybe in a later one. Now for the not-so-fun part. This portion of the episode will depict graphic descriptions of torture and abuse and is not meant for sensitive listeners or those under the age of 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, this week... sorry to cut you off there.
No, you're good. This week, I will be covering The Blood Countess of Hungary, Erzsébet Báthory de Eced, but in American, we would call her Elizabeth Báthory from Eced, who was named the most prolific female serial killer by the Guinness Book of World Records.
Oh. I had not heard of her.
I bet you have. Did you ever hear about Lady Dracula, who bathed in the blood of young virgins?
Somewhere in the back of my mind, there's a little file there on that, I think. But it's way back there. I don't remember.
Well, that's who I'm covering.
Well, I'm excited to hear about it.
All right. Now there are going to be a lot of words and names in Hungarian. And as I have said in episodes past, I can speak English, bad English, a little bit of German, and even less Spanish. But I'm going to give this the old college try.
You know what? You're putting forth the effort, and that's what matters.
Hopefully I don't dingy this up too bad, but if I do, I'm sorry.
But you tried.
Yeah. Also, there's a lot of speculation and differing tales in this story, and there are a few reasons about why that is that I'm going to get to at the end of the story. I've tried to piece this story together the best way I can in an informative and hopefully entertaining way. Now let me tell you about this bish. Erzsébet was born on a family estate in Nyírbátor, Royal Hungary, either in 1560 or 1561 to Baron... I'm going to pause myself right here for a second because I saw a couple of different ways to say this name. So one of them was Georgi, which in Hungarian translate or in English it translates to George, but that's boring. But the one that I enjoyed the most was Hjorhi. So I'm going to be using Hjorhi.
I like it.
Her father's name was Baron Hjorhi Bathory VI of the Essid branch of the family, and his wife slash first cousin, Baroness Anna Bathory of the Smolio branch. And when they got married, neither one of them had to change their last names.
All right.
As with most royal families of the time, there was excessive inbreeding in the Bathory clan, and this is believed to have led to Erzsébet being plagued with lifelong health issues, including suffering from seizures brought on by epilepsy and migraines. And she was prone to fits of uncontrollable rage, usually leading to her lashing out violently at servants. Creepily, a common cure for seizures at the time was to take the blood of a non-sufferer and rub it on the inflicted's lips. Some people speculate that this might be where Erzsébet's bloodlust started, as just a way to self-medicate to help with her seizures.
Yeah, maybe. That could be where that came from.
Yeah. There are several stories from Elizabeth's past that are just wild. There was one from when she was about 6 where she was watching the public execution of a gypsy man who was either convicted of stealing food or a child. I saw both mentioned in different stories. Yeah. That's kind of the level of, like, differing facts that I can find.
How do you mix, like, those two?
So, well, they can mix these things because, well, I'll get to that at the end. But the way that they executed this man was by sewing him inside the body of a dying horse. And the story said that when little, you know, I'm just going to call her Elizabeth now. But when little Elizabeth saw this, she started giggling. Of course, there's no way of knowing if this story is true.
Oh my gosh.
But I guess I should just get that part out of the way. So this all happened in the 15th and 16th century in Hungary, which it was part, like, you know, whenever there was the Iron Curtain in Russia?
Yeah.
So all of this information was behind the Iron Curtain, and we couldn't get to it because they were being very secretive and they didn't like us. So whenever the Iron Curtain came down and researchers were able to go into these areas and find historical facts, they then had to translate them from medieval Hungarian into English. So that's why there's so many differing facts. It's because it's different translations.
I see.
It's a bunch. It's a lot. There are also some pretty weird stories about the whole Bathory family. There were stories that one of Erzsébet's uncles wore armor inside of the house and would have battles with unseen foes. There were tales that Erzsébet learned about Satanism and witchcraft from different family members, that her father had a favorite chair that he refused to get out of. Like, Dubro would not move. He ate, slept, and stayed in that chair at all times.
Oh, okay. That's a little more extreme than just, this is my spot.
Yep. He took Sheldon Cooper and just upped it.
Cranked it to 11.
That her brother would strip butt-ass naked and run around the local village. And again, there is no way knowing if these things are true or not. What I can tell you is, though it seemed the whole Bathory family was straight up crazy, they also held a lot of power, wealth, and good standing with the other nobles of their time. Her family had a few voivods, which are like military leaders of Transylvania, thrown in the mix. A few of her cousins became princes of Transylvania as well, and they even had a king of Poland amongst their ranks. So they were hella rich. Her family owned several estates across the country, and with all the land and prestige came the burden of managing the surrounding lands, villages, and peasants. Now, before Erzsébet was born, there had been an uprising throughout the country because the people in the villages were tired of breaking their backs just so the lords and ladies could get richer. Relevant. Oh, excuse me, I need some water. The way things worked back then was the nobles owned the land and had all the gold but didn't have to pay taxes, while the peasants couldn't own land, had to work all the time, and pay taxes to the nobles who were supposed to protect them in case of invasion. During the Ottoman War, the people of Hungary were being attacked, and instead of the nobles sending in the army to protect them, they decided to train the people to fight. Which, hell yeah, for being able to defend yourself. But the nobles did not give them sufficient training, weapons, or armor. So with the meager supplies and training they were given, the peasants revolted and attacked the nobles right alongside the Turks. When the nobles figured out what was going on, they eventually spent their money to hire mercenaries to come in and squash the revolt. After this was done, they made up some new laws stating that now the peasants could not own weapons, leave their village without permission, and had to work for free 50 days out of the year, which is about one day a week. But also because of these laws, nobles could do pretty much whatever they wanted to peasants. They could beat them, starve them, sentence them to death. That was just how it was back then. That is the world Erzsébet was born into. Okay, back to this bitch. Around the time that Erzsébet was 10, both of her parents died. I couldn't find out much about how, just that they did. Then, when she was 11, she was betrothed to... oh, goddess. Count Ferenc Dinashti de Dinash et Fagrashvold. Boom.
I feel like that you nailed that pretty well.
Got it in one. Such was the custom of the time that Elizabeth was then sent to her future in-laws to learn how to run a household from her future mother-in-law. Here is another place where the stories differ, because some say that Erzsébet was mistreated by her mother-in-law and had to watch as she mercilessly beat servants who had displeased her, telling Erzsébet that this is what she was supposed to do, while other stories claim that Lady Nadashti had actually died before Elizabeth had even arrived at their home. What is known is that Erzsébet had a bit of a culture shock after she moved in. While she was growing up, not to say that she wasn't still growing up, she was 11 for goddess sakes.
Yeah.
At her parents' home, she was free to do what she wanted. She enjoyed dressing in boys' clothes and doing activities that were generally reserved for boys at the time. She learned how to ride horses, joust. She also enjoyed learning. And this part was actually really impressive because her parents believed that girls should have the same education as boys, which at the time that was unheard of.
Yeah.
She could read and write in not only Hungarian, but German, Latin, Greek, and Slavic, which is doubly impressive because most noblemen at the time couldn't even read and write in their native language, let alone for others.
She's a smart lady.
Yes. She was interested in biology, math, science, anatomy, astrology. She had a brilliant mind and was a lifelong learner. But when she moved to the castle in Dashti, she had to learn to be a lady. How to dress, eat, sit, and all that jazz. And it all sounds
miserable. Yes.
Yeah, it does. When she was 13, Erzsébet, who was still a baby, became pregnant, and again, stories differ.
Mm.
One said that it was by a peasant boy who worked at the castle, another that it was a noble. Some said it was consensual, some not. But the story about the peasant boy goes that Erzsébet became pregnant and the Bathory family covered it up, sending Erzsébet away until after the baby, who was said to be a girl, was born. Then the baby was given to a local woman who was paid to take her away. Somehow, Ferenc, who was away in some school in Vienna learning or whatever, found out about the baby and tracked the peasant boy down. This is where it starts to get graphic. So, he then castrated the lad before setting a pack of wild dogs on him. Supposedly, Erzsébet heard about this and was not only okay with it, but also kinda into it. It excited her.
Great.
Ferenc and Erzsébet got married when she was 15, he was 19, and the wedding ceremony lasted 3 days. 4,500 people came to the shindig. There was a jousting tournament, which supposedly Ferenc won. Drinking, dancing. Also, apparently, there used to be a wedding custom where the bride and her party all dressed the same and covered their faces with veils before parading around the groom, and he had to successfully pick out which one was his true bride.
They knew how to party back then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's subjective, but...
I guess Lady Luck was on his side because Ferenc was able to pick out which gal was Erzsébet, and after they said their vows, the whole wedding party, including the cleric, stood outside their wedding chamber listening to make sure they consummated their union.
Oh.
Mm. Mm-hmm. As a wedding gift, Ferenc gave Erzsébet his household, the castle of Cheta, as well as the 17 surrounding villages. Also, because Erzsébet's social standing was higher than Ferenc's, not only did she keep her surname, but he actually took hers. And that part is kind of ballin'.
Yeah, that is. Mm-hmm. Like...
It's like, that doesn't happen.
People don't even do that now.
I know, right?
Really?
Around the time that Ferenc and Erzsébet got married, Lord Nadashi passed away, leaving everything to his only child, Ferenc. So combining the young couple owned 23 estates, making them richer than they already were. They were both in their teens and were so rich, they were lending the King of Hungary money to fund the war effort. That part is important, so keep it in mind. After the wedding, the couple moved to the castle of Cheta and... Okay, I keep forgetting how to say this guy's name. Ferenc. I don't know why it's so hard. I've been saying it all day.
It's because you're on the spot now.
I think so. Okay. After the wedding, the couple moved to the castle of Cheta and Ferenc went off to fight against the Turks in the still ongoing Ottoman War. I mean, just pick an Ottoman. Why you gotta fight about it? But since Ferenc was gone all the time, killing people, it would be 10 years before he and Erzsébet had their first child, that being very odd for the time, but boy did they make up for it later. Between 1585 and 1598, they had 5 children. Anna, Orska, Kata, Andres, and Paul. Sadly, only 3 of their children would make it to adulthood.
Mm.
In 1578, Ferenc became the chief commander of the Hungarian army and earned himself the nickname the Black Knight of Hungary by being ruthless in battle. It is said that after battle, he would torture any surviving Turks. Then after they were dead, he would dance with their corpses and play kickball with the decapitated heads. While Ferenc was away from the castle, they were a interesting couple, to say the least. While Ferenc was away from the castle, earning himself his own wicked reputation, it fell to Erzsébet to run things. From what I could tell, she was really good at it. She ran the household, settled disputes, and even set up medical care for the villages. Later, during the Long War, which lasted either 13 or 15 years, Erzsébet was in charge of defending the estates, which lay en route to Vienna, Austria. And I've been there!
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it was really pretty. It's one of the food capital of the world, and I ate at Burger King.
That sounds like something I would do.
But that's a story for a different day. There were several instances where Erzsébet intervened on behalf of destitute women, including a woman whose husband was captured by the Ottomans, and a woman whose daughter was raped and impregnated by them. So how could a woman who was from such noble stock and generally seemed to care about the people in her villages become the Blood Countess, known for not only torturing and killing young servant girls, but bathing in their blood? She, like most serial killers, hid her true self from the public eye and left her depravity for the privacy of her own home. Things are about to get rough, my neighbors, so buckle up. Before we jump into that, do you have any questions about anything I just said?
Yeah, I got one question.
Okay, hit me with it.
You did say that dude that they sewed up into the horse was, like, alive when they were sewing him into the horse, right? Because I'm still just kind of stuck on that.
Yeah, he was alive. Again, there's differing accounts of if they even sewed him into a horse, because, like, horses cost more money than people did back then.
Yeah, like, that would be a waste of a...
But it said that it was a dying horse, so maybe if they knew it was already dying, then they just went ahead and did it. But the way that this was torture was that while the guy was inside of it and it was decomposing, that those gases that we talked about during our Halloween episode, or I talked about during our Halloween episode, I'm kind of gross, aren't I? I don't know. But those gases break down and they also put off a lot of heat. So essentially, this guy is baking.
Oh my gosh.
They're turducking him. Well, oh, I have that visual now. Why did I do this to myself?
I'm just gonna keep picturing, like, Link inside Jabu Jabu's belly, but Jabu Jabu was alive and there was just a whole ass dungeon inside him. It wasn't just easy bake oven time. That's awful. Oh,
I'm going to hell.
Okay, well, anyway, thanks for clearing that up. Just wondering.
Okay, so, as I said, things are about to get rough, my neighbors. So, this part hurts me, so I'm not going to go super into detail, but even just, like, skimming the surface of this is not a fun time.
It's enough.
But inside the walls of her castle, Erzsébet is said to torture her servants. She would burn her victims with hot irons, beat them, stick needles under their fingernails, pour ice water over their bodies, and leave them to freeze to death outside. She sewed their lips together, and there are even stories later in her life where she bit chunks of flesh off of their breasts and faces.
Oh my word. Wow.
Yeah, and yeah, they go into some, like, detail in the things that I read. So, I'm saving you a little bit. Some stories said that Ference not only knew about what was going on, but would also teach Erzsébet different methods of torture that he picked up while away at war. One story goes that he dragged a servant girl outside in the dead of summer, stripped her completely naked, covered her in honey, before making her stay there for a day and a night, while insects that were drawn to the honey bit and stung her. Then, when she fainted, he dipped paper and oil, stuck them between her toes, and set them on fire to revive her.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's such a, like, specific and terrifying, gruesome thing to do.
Yep.
Gee.
It also said that Ference brought Erzsébet a clawed glove home from war that she could wear to slash at her victims. So he brought her the Freddy Krueger hand.
Basically.
Yep. When the weather was bad, Erzsébet would bring her activities inside to her very own torture chamber that he had built for her in the basement. That's true love. You know? She found a hobby, and he supported it.
Yeah. That is true love.
In the worst possible way ever.
Yeah.
Still. Now, a question you might be asking is, where is she getting all of these victims? At first, she was using her own servants, which were young girls, mostly between the ages of 10 and 14.
Oh.
From the surrounding villages that she and her most trusted cohorts lured to the castle with promises of work. Most families were all too happy to send their daughters to the Bathory home, because not only did it provide them with a bit of money, but it opened opportunities for the girls that they wouldn't have otherwise. They could get an education, learn how to act like a proper lady, network. They were, so like they would network, and not only that, but if they were at the castle, then that was one less mouth that that family had to feed because they were getting fed at work. They never thought that once they sent their children to the castle that they would never come back. It says that later she actually, when she couldn't like lure people in by herself or like her known associates, which were four main servants that helped her, they had other people in the villages that would come in and help lure people there to work, or they would just straight up kidnap them.
Huh.
So that was a thing. If you remember from earlier, I had said that nobles could do pretty much whatever they wanted to their servants, and while that was true, apparently there was still a line that could be crossed. The clergymen at the local church started to become concerned when the countess asked for one of them to come to the castle to perform last rites for a servant girl who had died. The clergyman was surprised when he arrived, though, because the girl had already been sealed inside a coffin, which was unusual to say the least. So usually, like, he would get there, they would be on a bed, he'd do the thing, and then put them in the coffin himself, right? And then take them off for burial.
Yeah.
But the countess pulled him aside to explain that the poor thing had died of cholera, so they had wanted to have a speedy burial to stop the spread of the disease. Because at the time, cholera was a mass killer. So this is an understandable excuse, but he did his duty and took the body away for burial. But then a few days later, servants from the castle arrived at the church with another coffin, this one much bigger than it should have been. A rumor had already spread through the village that there were three bodies inside of it. The clergyman went to Erzsébet and asked her if the stories were true. Were there three bodies inside the coffin? She explained that there were only two.
Okay.
One had died during the night and the other was close to death, so they waited until she had also passed before putting them together in the same coffin. That damned cholera struck again!
It's just terrible.
Oh, yeah. It's the worst.
So easy to catch cholera inside of a castle.
During one of the many funerals for her servants, Erzsébet received a shock of her own when Minister Esteban Magyari stood before the congregation and accused her of being a killer. Erzsébet was outraged and said that he would regret his actions because she was going to tell her husband. My husband will hear about this. Erzsébet rushed home and penned a letter to Ference, who immediately came home and, after talking and bribing, made the whole situation go away. Things calmed down for a while, that is, until 1604, when Ference died of mysterious illness.
How convenient.
So, around 1601, Ference started to complain about debilitating pain in his legs. By 1603, he was permanently disabled. Before his death on January 4th, 1604, he entrusted the care of his wife and children to his friend and his wife's cousin, Jorge Torzo.
Old George.
George. Such a boring name. I'm sorry for anyone named George.
You can call him Georgie.
No, Jorge. So much more fun. Jorge. After Ference's death, everything now fell to Elizabeth. So in Hungarian noble culture, it was customary for a widower to go into mourning for a year out of the public eye. Erzsébet lasted about a month, then she went on a spending spree, buying gowns, jewels, all kinds of stuff she probably didn't need. It is also said that around this time was when she really ramped up her torture on the servant girls. One account stated that by the time she was done, there was so much blood on the floor that it could be scooped up with your hands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was killing girls left and right, but since the clergy would no longer take her cholera victims, the trusted servants had to get creative with where they hid the bodies. Some were buried on the castle grounds, some in the churchyard late at night, some were just thrown over the castle walls in hopes that wild animals would eat them. Elizabeth didn't give a fuck anymore.
Wow.
Ference wasn't there to be like, you might want to roll that back. A year after Ference's death, Elizabeth learned that her older brother, Stefan, the guy who used to run around the village butt-ass naked, had died.
Huh.
So she traveled back to her hometown, to the castle Etchid. Along the way, she just snapped and attacked her handmaids that were in the carriage with her. She beat two of them so badly that they died on their way there and were buried beside the road. On the way back, she beat another girl until death. This girl, however, was part of the lower nobility. In 1610, Elizabeth was having trouble finding young peasant girls to come work at her castle. I wonder why.
Yeah.
So she decided to open a gymnasium, or a finishing school, for girls of the lower nobility. Nobles started sending their young daughters to Castle Chetha to learn all of the boring things Elizabeth had to learn when she had arrived there. They hadn't heard about the missing peasant girls, as it was being kept hush-hush due to Elizabeth's being of such high standing. But once their daughters started going missing, it was the beginning of the end. Elizabeth had fucked up. A few peasants complaining to the crown was one thing, but nobles were a whole other story. King Matthias II couldn't just ignore the stories he was hearing, so he assigned his second-in-command to go investigate. Do you want to guess who his second-in-command was?
Who was his second?
We've talked about him.
Was it George?
The Palatine of Hungary was none other than Jorge Torzo.
All right.
Elizabeth's cousin and the very man Ference had asked to take care of his family after his death. Torzo arrived unannounced at Castle Chetha, and when they entered, they found one girl dead, one on the verge of death, even more wounded or imprisoned. Torzo arrested Elizabeth right then and there, along with four of her servants that were caught in the act of torturing a young girl. Torzo gathered testimony from the surrounding villages. Over 300 people testified against the Countess on their own accord. Her cohorts were tortured into confessing using the same means that they had been inflicting on their victims, and in the end, two of the women had their fingers pulled off by hot pliers before being burned at the stake, while a young man that had helped Elizabeth kidnap peasant girls was beheaded before being added to the fire. Elizabeth herself was actually never tried due to her nobility. The king had wanted to have a public trial and execution, but Thurzo, maybe to save his family any more shame, or maybe to honor his promise to Ference, pointed out that if the king were to try Elizabeth, that he would open the whole nobility up for persecution. Instead, the king ordered that Elizabeth be walled up inside her own castle until she died and the world forgot about her. So stonemasons came to the castle Chetha and bricked all the windows and doors to a room, or a couple of rooms, it was one of those differing stories again, with Elizabeth inside, with only a hole big enough to slip food through. Guards were placed at the door, and for the next 3.5 to 4 years, Elizabeth stayed in isolation. On the evening of August 20th, 1614, Elizabeth complained to her guard that her hands were cold. He replied, "It's nothing, mistress, just go lie down." She went to sleep and was found dead the following morning. She was buried in the churchyard at Chetha on November 25th, 1614, but according to some sources, due to the villagers' uproar over having that vile woman buried in their cemetery, her body was moved to the family crypt in Etchin. The location of her body today is unknown. Like, they went to Castle Etchin and they opened it, and they were unable to find her body there, so then they went to the church at Chetha, and it wasn't there either, so they're thinking that maybe she was buried in an unmarked grave, so that way her remains were not defiled.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, that's the end of my story. I would like to say thank you to Google Translate for all of your help on this episode. I couldn't have done it without you. I also got my information a lot of it is from Wikipedia. It's also an article by All That's Interesting, InfamousLady.com, TresBohemes.com, and the book Countess Elizabeth Bathory, The Life and Legacy of History's Most Prolific Serial Killer by Charles River Editors. So those are my sources, but like, there's a couple of things that I wanted to also talk about, but I didn't write them down, and now my brain is blanking, because that's what the fuck happens. But, yeah, no, it was one of the, the main thing I wanted to talk about was, so there was a story that Erzsébet would bathe in the blood of her servants because she thought that it kept her youthful. I didn't add it in, like, I mentioned it in the story because that's, like, how most people associate her, or they're like, oh, okay, that lady. Scientifically, it's just not a thing that would probably happen. The podcast Morbid has a very awesome episode on Erzsébet. One of the hosts there, she's autopsy tech. So she actually like broke down the science behind it. And she was talking about how a standard bathtub is like 80 or so gallons of water.
Yeah.
And so there are 8 pints in a gallon, and a human can hold, or a average woman, like our age, can hold anywhere between 10 to like maybe 12 pints. And so it would take like 8 or 9 average height and build women to fill a regular tub with blood if it had the same viscosity as water, but it doesn't, it's heavier. And like Erzsébet's whole thing is that she was into torture, right?
Yeah.
Well, she would need 8 or 9 full bodies of blood, so she wouldn't be able to torture people and have a bath. Not only that, but, like, blood coagulates. So, yeah. Unless you're, like, getting in there right after. I don't know. It was just a big whole thing. It's not factual. It can't be factual. It cannot be a thing.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the stories, and also the stories of her bathing in blood didn't come out until 100 years after her death. So it's, and it, this was like the height of like vampirism. So everyone's like, oh, the blood.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stories that were actually like made up about the blood. Another one was that where she got the idea to use the blood was that one of her servants was brushing her hair and like hit a snag and pulled on it and she got mad. So she hit the servant girl. And whenever she did, blood got on her hand, and then when she wiped it away, she noticed that the blood was like more vibrant and youthful. But there is speculation that she might have used the blood a little bit and just kind of smeared it on there or drank it.
Did like a carry thing a little bit, just sprinkled a little on her or something.
Well, like today, blood facials are a thing. Like, you can go and have your own blood taken out of your body and put onto a facial.
What?
You can also have it injected into your face. Yeah, those are things.
So you can take
your blood
out of your body and then just re-inject it
into your face.
Into a different
or
part
have
of
it
your
put
body
onto your face.
Huh.
Yeah, it's gross.
Well, today I learned a lot.
But anyway, that is the Blood Countess of Hungary, Erzsébet Bathory. I learned new words. I learned Hungarian for this. You're welcome. Also, again, I apologize if I messed up any of those words.
But you know what? You researched and you attempted to pronounce them correctly, so you tried. But also, that was a story that was very interesting.
I'm sorry. But anyway, guys, as a palate cleanser, we're actually going to do the Friendship Power Hour, and we have a promo of another super awesome podcast that we believe that you should be listening to, and we're going to play that for you right now, and we'll be right back.
Hi, guys. I'm Amy.
And I'm Kenzie.
And we're the hosts of the new true crime podcast, Sheer Crime. We are old beauty school friends who reconnected a decade later to learn that not only did we now live in the same town, but we are both true crime fanatics. Every week, in the comfort of my basement, cold drinks in hand, we discuss true crime documentaries and give our raw and uncensored take on the evil acts that occur in our world. If COVID, quarantine, and working from home have you aching for a break from the same old, come hang with us on Share Crime. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else that you subscribe and listen. New episodes are released every Wednesday, and bonus episodes are sprinkled in here and there. We can't wait to hear from you. And remember, never run with scissors. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Friendship Power Hour. We are back. I did not do this at the end of my thing, which I meant to do it like halfway through and then at the end. Do you have any questions about anything that I said? I feel like I'd be a scholar.
Well, let's see. We already went over the horse, so... and we went over the logistics of actually being able to bathe in blood in a medieval mm-hmm. bathtub. So I'm curious if you know why they went about, like, Rapunzel style, like, walling her up inside a room in the castle instead of just, like, throwing her in jail or just, like, killing her or something? Is it just because she was a noble or, like...
So from one of the things that I've read and also from listening to a couple of just different podcasts that I can't think of the name of because it was just, like, in passing or, like, things I've heard in the past, not necessarily something that I did, like, my research on, they think it has a lot to do with Torzo. Because, you know, he was her cousin. And it was one of the... You know how I had mentioned that the king that had borrowed money from them? Mm-hmm. So, Erzsébet, after Ference had died, had kept trying to get that money back. Like, all the people that they lent money to, she was like, hey, I kind of need that back now. And they're like, haha, can't pay you. See you next month. So, Torzo went and talked to the king... And the Batres and the Nadashti got together and they told the king that if he wouldn't kill Erzsébet, they would forgive his debts. So it was just kind of like a wipe. But the thing was, if he had killed her, like tried her publicly and killed her, he could have just taken all of her property and it wouldn't have mattered. But they think that Torzo went and talked to him and he was like, hey, you know, if you... go against the nobility, you're going to open us all up to this.
Okay.
Like, if you convict her, then what's to say you can't convict someone else before accidentally, large quotation marks, killing a servant?
By accident.
By accident. Quotation marks. Like, it just looks like bunny ears.
Or, you know, they just got cholera.
Yeah. Cholera. But, killer, yes. But, so there was several of those stories. Also, there was thought that Torzo had set it up to where Erzsébet could go and basically live out the rest of her life. So that way, when she did die, the crown couldn't take her stuff, but instead it would actually go to her children like it was supposed to.
Oh, I see.
But again, as I said, I think like halfway through this was all happening in the 15th and 16th Hungary, and we didn't know anything about this until after the Iron Curtain came down. So, but it's legend there. Like, you can go to the remains of her castle, and you can go and take a tour, and you can kind of see a wall that looks like it used to be a doorway that was bricked up, and they're like, that was part of her
wall. Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I kind of want to go visit now.
You want to go to Hungary? I got a passport. Let's go.
I don't have a passport, but I can get one.
Yes.
When we can travel.
Wasn't that
one day.
Expensive? One day.
Someday.
But anyway, friend, it is now your turn, and I'm super excited to see what you're covering for blood.
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 All right. So, disclaimer, which I feel like this could be a disclaimer on most of the things that I put together for this podcast, but this was written when I was quite tired. So, it's a bit weird. Bit out there, but you know what? We're just gonna go for it.
I believe in you.
All right. Well, this is the story of Bloody Bones.
Bloody Bones? Oh, wait, this is a story you wrote?
Well, it's complicated.
Oh, okay.
I won't say I... We'll get there.
Okay.
But for now, I'm just going to jump into the story.
All right.
Bloody Bones. Bloody Bones, the old lady said in her best gravelly voice. The campfire popped and crackled, creating the perfect atmosphere for the frightening folklore. The moon shimmered on the nearby lake. The old woman's face was solemn as she continued. This is the story, my children, of Bloody Bones, whatever it or they are. The woman glanced over to the lake. It was still. Now, some people claim that Bloody Bones is a demon, a disgusting, chilling, no-good water demon, haunting deep ponds, lakes, and old filled marl pits. Okay. It lies...
Sorry.
Nah, you good. Just thinking about that lake?
No, I hate lakes. I'll tell you about it later. Go on.
It lies in wait in the depths, listening and waiting. Waiting for naughty children to drag into the vast and dark body of water with it. The old woman chuckled. Now, I personally don't believe this story. After all, how can old Bones know about naughty children if he's always in the water? How can he lure them in? It's ridiculous, really. Unless, of course, you found yourself a conjurer. They say that a witchy woman can conjure up Bloody Bones and Rawhead just by chanting their names. Who's Rawhead, you might ask? Rawhead is said to be Bloody Bones' companion, named that way because he's a floating skull stripped of skin. Rawhead helps to capture children for Bloody Bones to feast on. She smirked. No, I'll tell you what I think. What I've been told and what I believe to have seen with my own two eyes as a youngin' like y'all. I think Bloody Bones lives in the dark, forgotten areas of homes. That old nook under the stairs, in the storm cellar, perhaps an empty cupboard. And if you're lucky, well, and brave enough, you may just catch a glimpse of the dreadful creature, hunched over, blood running down its mouth, scraggly hair, and sharp, jagged teeth, sitting and waiting on a pile of raw bones. Children's bones, to be exact. The rotten ones, that told lies and cursed, that didn't mind their manners or brush their teeth when they were told. The more misbehaved, the more likely you are to see him. And, well, if you see him, it's probably too late. Anyways, children, I think it's getting close to your bedtime. Why don't you head on inside and wash up, and don't forget to brush your teeth. No sneaking any sweets before bed, either. You've had plenty of s'mores for the night. You wouldn't want Bloody Bones to pay a visit, would you? So, basically... That's the story of Bloody Bones. A couple stories, anyway. The tale of Bloody Bones is actually an old folklore that's been passed down for ages. In fact, I only knew Bloody Bones existed because it was told to me as a child.
Oh, fuck.
By my grandfather when I was begging to hear a scary story while we were on vacation, like up in the mountains. We used to rent out cabins a lot. And so I was always like, dude, tell me a scary story. And so my grandpa was just like, well, all right.
I got one for you.
I'll tell you the scariest of stories, little 7-year-old child or however old I was.
Oh, you God. Know,
young enough, I still remember the tale of Bloody Bones to this day. But yeah, so my grandpa really delivered on that. but yeah, so Bloody Bones basically can be chalked up to a boogeyman created to put fear into children to convince them to behave. Basically like Santa, but like way scarier.
So Krampus. He's Krampus. He's summer Krampus.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just like year-round Krampus. Like
Krampus. Why was he saying Krampus?
Krampus. Krampus. Krampus.
Krampus. Krampus. Krampus. Oh, Krampus. Ooh. Now. Yeah, that's what I said. I'm sorry, Krampus. Don't get me. Oh, no.
So, I guess it wasn't, like, as well known of a folklore as, say, you know, like, I don't know, other boogeymans out there, like.
The boogeyman?
Yeah, you know, the boogeyman. You just don't hear about Bloody Bones as much because, let me tell you, I've brought it up a few times and people have looked at me and been like, WTF is that?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was.
And I'm like, you know, Bloody Bones. You summon him in the mirror like you can with, like, Candyman and Blair Witch. And they're just like, no, that sounds awful. But, so, yeah, the Oxford English Dictionary cites around 1548 as the first written appearance of Bloody Bones, which is insane to me.
So, our stories were around the same time.
Oh, they were! I love it when our universes collide.
They do. That's how we got a podcast.
Exactly, right? That's how it worked. Now we have a podcast. But, so yeah, like, who knows how long the story's been passed around, like, before that. That's just mm-hmm. the first, like, written appearance. But, you know, the folklore usually spreads by word of mouth first for some time. Supposedly, it originated in Cornwall, England, surrounding a massacre near the village of, gonna say this wrong, near the village of Baldu in Knockershole. That's the name of the village.
Those are real words?
Those are real words strung together. Those are certainly all words that create the name of a village in Cornwall, England, apparently. I kind of am regretting that I didn't go deeper into that wormhole and learn about, like, how to get that name.
What happened during the massacre? I know what I'm going to be Googling after this.
See? I like to leave things, you know, so you can go do your own Googling afterwards. Keep the podcast party going.
See, I don't like doing that. I'm like, I want you to know everything. I'll encompass the story.
So basically, this, like, massacre, it's said that, like, Bloody Bones was basically either an evil spirit attracted by the death and destruction of the massacre, or is a spirit from the massacre.
Yeah.
And the stories were particularly, like, common and shared around a lot in Lancashire and Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, the stories made their way over to the southern part of the U.S. And us southern folk friggin' love us a good folklore, love us a good ghost story, especially our, like, Appalachian friends. Like,
I mean, if you can put it in a lake, why not?
Exactly. A crick, you know, we love our Wait, scary stories.
Do you actually call it a crick, or are you just southering that up?
I do not call it a crick. I was okay, it up, but I do have family members that I'm fairly certain use the term crick.
That's not the word.
Instead of creek. But yeah, so more or less, like, when it came to the South is when we just, like, rolled with it and made it as gruesome and gross as we could.
Of course.
Just in an attempt to get kids to behave. And probably also because just the sheer thrill of scaring generations of children. Because, you know,
I mean, why I would not? Like,
it's fun.
I would like to point out, you literally asked for it.
I literally did. As a small child, I literally was like, Grandpa, tell me a scary story.
And he delivered.
A ghost story. And he was like, all right, Bloody Bones is going to come get you. And I was like, what's that?
It's like, make sure you brush your teeth.
Yeah. But, so I couldn't find, like, a ton more information about Bloody Bones and his pal Rawhead. there really wasn't like a ton of info on Wiki, and like a lot of this is just me like attempting to remember the details from the story that I was told as a kid. But like some say that like Bloody Bones is like, and Rawhead are like two entities. Some describe it as described in the story above. Some describe it as Bloody Bones is like a headless dancing skeleton and Rawhead is like
his head.
His head that floats beside him. You know, that delivers the bones to Bloody Bones, but that doesn't make sense because Bloody Bones doesn't have a mouth in this case. So I've always kind of, which that's the version I seem to remember, was the one described in the story where he's more, well, my voice is just going out, where he's more of just kind of like a golem type, scraggly,
demon
goblin-y creature demon thing that's just like chilling under the stairs. You know?
Yeah, no, thank you. No, when you were describing it being in the water, so I think I've mentioned this before, but I have two older brothers. I have the eldest and the older. But used to whenever we were kids and we would go swimming at the lake because we live in rural Tennessee and that's just what you fucking do. They're really bad about dunking me, like, at public pools and whatnot, but it was worse in the lake, because they would dunk me, and whenever they'd shove my head under the water, they'd put their foot on top of my head, and then shove me down to the rest of, like, their body length.
I had the same thing happen to me.
Oh my god, it's so scary, because, like, by that point, like, you know, at first, if they just dunk you, you're still near the surface, but whenever they do their whole body length, that's whenever you get to, like, the murky, cold part. And it was, oh my god, I think I'm just having PTSD, give me a minute. But, yeah, so to combat this, my hair used to be down to my ass when I was little. And so whenever we went swimming, my mom would do it where she would, like, pull it up into a ponytail and then put it into a braid so that way it wasn't, like, a tangled mess when I got out.
Yeah.
So I got really good at being able to, like, burst through the surface and just whip my hair. I just smack it, and it was just a rope of hair right to the face.
A wet rope of hair, and you got the tail end on it, like.
So, yeah.
That hurt.
It better.
Yeah, I remember this only happened to me one time because I think I, like, terrified the relative that did it. But, like, we went to the lake all the time. If anybody listened to our Two Truths and a Lie episode about staph infection, yeah, in theory, we think I got it from a lake. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. But, we used to love getting dunked under the water, and, like, we had, like, life jackets on, so, of course, we were, like, buoys, like, we just,
yeah,
you dunk us under, we're gonna pop right back up. But, I guess my, one of my siblings had been, like, asking to be dunked, like, deeper, like, more, and so they did that, they did the foot
full
thing.
Body.
Yeah, and so, you know, she popped back up, ha ha ha, I didn't ask for that, but I guess they just assumed, like, well, she's laughing at her sibling. You know, we always wanted the same thing, so they did it. And I don't know how I didn't die, but, like, they pushed me under, and so me being a kid, for whatever reason, I guess was, like, because we'd done it so many times in a row that I was, like, okay, it's time to, like, breathe and cut, like, I'm gonna break the surface any second. And I,
oh no,
it was completely submerged in the water still.
Oh, I don't no. think.
Yeah, so I came up, of course, just like, like,
dying,
just popping up effing lake water. The most disgusting water. Like, not even free flowing, like, through, like,
nope,
flowing
stagnant,
creek water,
just sitting in a spot.
Just in the sun, just like, it didn't help my immune system at all.
That's how you got staph. That exact instance is how you got staph.
That's the moment. But yeah, so that only happened one time, and, like, Like, they felt really bad about it. They were like,
better
oh my
fucking
God,
feel
I'm
bad about that.
So sorry. And I was like, it's okay. Like, I would have been fine with it if I had, like, been prepared and, like, known.
Yeah.
Like, because I loved, you know, being in the water, like, going underwater, pretending I was a mermaid, all that jazz. Like, love being dunked, like, all the time. I just, like, wasn't expecting to be that deep. So it just threw me off. And I don't know what in my, like, pea-sized child brain made me think, open your mouth.
And breathe.
And breathe before you physically, like, feel yourself breaking the surface of the water. Like, I was still very clearly under the water and just, like, for some reason, just, like, Kirby'd myself.
Oh, God.
Just, like, inhale as deeply as I could.
No, we, So, when my brothers did this to me, I think one of the last times they ever did it was, like, 98, which is the year that Anaconda came out. And for some reason, my dad specifically let us watch this movie about the giant-ass snake in the Amazon that was killing everybody.
Yeah, wholesome
and
so, fun.
And, like, it was the 90s, so I wasn't wearing a life jacket. The elders shoved me down underneath the water. You know, it did that whole kind of light but still murky and then darker, 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 cold.
That's way more terrifying because you didn't have a life jacket on. Like, at least mine, like, I was just a buoy. I was going to pop
I started
right back
taking
up.
Swim lessons when I was 3. I was confident. But it was, like, I don't think my mom was expecting them to, like, dunk me that hard, like,
yeah,
that far. Which, like I said, I think this is the last time that he ever did it. But I'm also one of those, like, I open my eyes under the water. Like, does not bother me. And so I'm watching the, like, all I could, oh my, no, I'm getting PTSD. I gotta stop.
Okay.
I've never had this experience before.
Let's
where
not
like a
have
memory
a panic attack
tricking
on the podcast here.
Oh, God. Yeah, I need to talk to my therapist about this.
Probably.
I didn't realize I was repressing that.
Well, sorry to dredge that memory up.
That's okay. Fucking bloody bones.
But
also,
you know,
if the bones are in the water, how are they still bloody? Bringing it back to your topic. How are they
yeah,
still
you
bloody
know,
if he's in the
yeah
water that washes away?
Well, see, that's why old lady in my story is like, nah, that's not the right story.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't add up. It makes more sense Bloody Bones would be a golem in a cupboard just being, like, creepy and terrifying.
Did you brush your teeth? No, I'm going to eat you now.
I always, like, imagined Bloody Bones, like, I would go back and forth between, like, because, you know, I was a kid and literally I, like, thought about this, like, all the time. Like, like, not the fear of, like, if I'm naughty, Bloody Bones is going to get me, but more like, does that thing exist? Is that real? Like, I get, like, I don't know. I would try to picture it all the time. And so I would either picture, I think, therapy session. this may have also helped stem one of, like, this nightmare I had as a kid that I can't remember if I ever brought up on the podcast or not, where I, like, me trying to, like, picture Bloody Bones in my head, like, as a kid, because, again, for some reason, I just, like, thought about it, like, way too much, probably. Like, I guess it impacted me more than I thought. I don't know.
There you go, Grandpa.
But
traumatized your grandkid.
Yeah, thanks, Grandpa. But, so, basically, like, I remember having, like, a distinct nightmare as a child, which, forward, like, I, like, had a weird irrational fear already of, like, pictures and videos of ultrasounds, which is, like, a really weird specific thing to be afraid of. Like, never had any, like, negative interactions with it. Like, I would just, like, if I saw the VHS tape of, like, my ultrasound when I was, like, a kid of, like, in my mother's womb, like, I would scream and cry and, like, hyperventilate and, like, almost vomit, like, on the floor. Like, it scared me so much. And, like, so anyway, that was a weird thing. But the way, I don't know if you've ever watched, like, a video, like, seen an ultrasound moving, how it's, like, the weird chalky, like,
yeah, yeah, I've seen them,
triangular shaped thing that moves, I guess. So basically, I pictured it as kind of like that, but, like, rib bones, like, floating, and then, like, two, like, eye bones and, like, a jaw just, like, floating around with, like, blood dripping on it. But anyway, so yeah, like, I had a nightmare one night that I was, like, it was like an Inception dream, because I, like, dreamt that I, like, ran to my parents' room and like was in bed in between them on their 80s waterbed. And and that like I turned over to like look at my mom who was asleep, and she like popped her eyes open and like
it was Bloody Bones
transformed into this terrifying ultrasound Bloody Bones looking thing. And so I flopped around to look at my dad, and he turned into the same thing. And so I got up and like jolted down the hall to my brother's room, and the two like Bloody Bones ultrasound angle whatever things were like following me. And so got to brother's room, and he turned into one. And so I ended up like running back into my room and hopping out the window or something in my dream, I can't remember exactly, and just like ran outside, and these things were like floating and like chasing me.
Nope. No, thank you.
But so I would go back and forth between picturing like that's what Bloody Bones looked like and picturing like Bloody Bones and Rawhead, like the golem creature and the floating skull that are just like
buddies.
They eat you, like, ooh, I'm scary, kind of thing.
I don't know why I do this with my hands when I think of spooky things.
I do it too. And then also, like, I would try, I tried a couple times, I got brave, tried to summon them in the mirror because, like,
why?
I guess I was told that that was a thing you could do. You could summon them just like you could with the other scary, chant something's name in the mirror three times and, like,
stop
in a dark bathroom and see what happens.
Demons.
Yeah, I guess I was just, like, summoning terrifying things all the time. As a kid.
No,
just...
you know, here's the thing. Stop summoning demons.
Well, I definitely don't anymore because I won't even, like, sleep in a room with, like, a mirror if I can, like, see in the mirror. Like, in my house, like, all the mirrors are, like... placed so if you're laying like on the bed or like wherever, like you can't see yourself in it. And like if I'm going to the bathroom at night, unless if the light's like on, even if it's nighttime, like I'm not looking in the mirror. So because like Bloody Bones might pop out and get me because I summoned him years ago and he's just been like waiting, you know.
Yeah, he's just waiting for you to let your guard down.
Yeah, he's just been waiting all these years.
To get you for not brushing your teeth. That's the moral of the story. Brush your teeth, kids.
That is the moral of the story.
There should not be kids listening to this podcast.
I'm surprised I didn't get eaten by Bloody Bones already because I did not brush my teeth enough as a kid. So, like, you know, maybe you'll come get me.
Stop saying it.
As I'm just like staring into my open, like dark closet right now. Like, that's cool. Okay, well.
Darkness, my own. All right, friend, it is actually your turn to pick from the not hat.
So let's
wrap this thing up. We got things to do. I have to pee.
So, let me. Oh, actually, I wrote them down this time because the online spinner was getting on my dadgum nerves.
Okay.
Because my computer is a dinosaur.
Well, friends, if you have your own stories to tell or ideas for the Not Hat, go ahead and hit us up at nightmaretown18@gmail.com over on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can find us on YouTube. We have a Patreon if you want to go over to that. That is Patreon.com/nightmaretown. And is it Nightmaretown? Yeah, it's Nightmaretown. Just Google us. Also, you can go over to our website, which is nightmaretownpodcast.com. We have an M now. We're
That's
excited
right.
about it.
Moving up in the world.
Yeah. And while you are over there, you can check out our merch, which we are going to be adding new merch soon, which I'm excited about. Also, we have a thing over there where you can submit your stories, and there's a button that you can click that says that we can or cannot say it on the podcast.
Yes.
So our next...
We would love to share.
We would. We would love to share, but we also just love to hear from you.
Yes, that too. I just want to read your scary stories.
I know, right? So our next episode is?
Time travel.
Oh, shit. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to cover yet. The research to ensue.
There are so many things.
There really is. I love time travel. Or I love research, honestly. But, all right, we're going to get off here because it's time. Guys, it's time.
It's bedtime.
Is it? I mean,
almost.
For you, maybe. I don't know.
Should be for me, but it won't be.
I'm an insomniac. I stay up a lot.
Me too.
So, but anyway.
Until next time.
Tell us a story. Bye.
Bye.